This CKNW podcast for AIM Medical Imaging, home of AIM Medical Imaging full body MRI scanning. A family history of medical issues is nothing to ignore. Book a preventative screening at aimmedicalimaging.com.
We've all heard the story of nightmare tenants, the ones who completely trash the place, who don't pay the rent on time, who party 24 hours. Yes, there are rules in place to mediate the relationship between the two, but how strictly are they enforced? With the rising price of housing in BC, it seems like everybody is converting their basement into a suite for renters. Are you selective when it comes to picking tenants for your suite? Is there any legislation in place to protect the rights of landlords? Is a bad tenant registry the answer? Amy Spencer is president and chief spokesperson of Landlord BC and joins me now. Hi.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
How serious is this issue?
It's pretty serious. It's one of the biggest issues we have, actually, with members calling in with problems with tenants.
And what do you do? What does Landlord BC do?
Landlord BC is a nonprofit industry association, and landlords can voluntarily join. And we provide education, we provide forms, and operational advice. So basically, if a landlord, if someone wants to rent out their secondary suite, they become a member of our association and they learn how to be a landlord.
It's interesting because this is a bit of a switch. Over the years, I've done lots of stories on tenants' rights, rent controls, those sorts of issues. In this case, landlords are calling for a bad tenant registry.
That's right. It actually sort of started... Recently, there was an issue in Maple Ridge where a couple had been scamming local landlords. Five of them actually got left with some bills when a tenant had jumped out on them. So their thought was, why isn't there a registry to let us know, to warn us about people, especially known tenants who were taking advantage of the system?
I'm reading a story about one person in Maple Ridge. She's owed $5,000.
Yes.
And hasn't been able to collect anything.
No, it's very difficult for a landlord to obtain money. Basically, they have to go to small claims court, and then a judge will decide whether to have someone's wages garnished. Otherwise, a landlord can hire a collection agency. That's about all they can do.
So, what needs to be?
Well, you know, a lot of people have said government needs to do something. I don't think we need to run to government every time there's a problem. I think people need more education. And that's our goal, is to educate people that want to be a landlord on what they need to do and how to screen tenants in the first place.
So what do they need to do, and what kind of screening should they be doing, and how much can they do? How much are they allowed to do?
If the tenant agrees, you're allowed to pull a credit check on a person. Credit worthiness is a huge indicator of what kind of person you're bringing into your home. You can also do a criminal check online. You can do a search of Supreme Court orders. You should also be checking for references and making sure those references are who they say they are. And, we teach courses on how to tell if someone's lying or not. So there's quite a few things you can do, but it takes time. I wouldn't recommend you just bring in someone off the street into your home.
I'm getting quite a reaction on Facebook. Denise writes, dude was in my suite for 7 weeks, invited three welfare homeless teenagers to move in, smoked crap in a water bong at my basement door every 5 minutes, left a pile of garbage 4 feet tall, grease all over the stove, just waiting to catch fire, stunk up the whole house whenever he attempted to cook anything, took the battery out of the smoke detector, stole the artwork in the laundry room, welched out on a month's rent, and she goes on and on. Pretty horrific stuff.
That's terrible, yeah. I feel really bad for people that have to go through that. And, you know, it's unfortunate that those tenants are sort of giving a bad name right now to tenants. I mean, I'm a tenant myself, and I know there's a lot of great tenants out there. But, man, when you get a bad one, you get a bad one.
But at the moment... there's really very little you can do. Are you able, looking at the story that Denise just set, can she not just evict the person, even at the first sign of, they invite three people to move in. Wouldn't that be reason enough to be able to move them out?
Well, they would have to apply for a dispute resolution at the residential tenancy branch.
Really?
Yes, they would. And in this case, if they wanted to end it before a one-month notice, they would have to prove cause.
But wouldn't moving three people into the suite be cause?
That is up to the Residential Tenancy Branch to decide against looking at the laws of the Residential Tenancy Act.
So it's not automatic?
No. I mean, if there's extenuating circumstances, the hearing will be held right away. But a landlord just can't go and lock the doors on someone or, you know, change the locks.
Talking with Amy Spencer, President and Chief Spokesperson of Landlord BC, what did you say the organization was, the Tenancy Act?
Landlord BC is our...
No, that's yours.
Yeah, but the act is called the Residential Tenancy Act, and that's what governs the relationship between landlords and tenants in the province.
So if a tenant has an issue with a landlord, they go to the same people that the landlord would go to resolve a dispute?
That's correct. It's a branch that is governed, it's with the provincial government, and they hear about 22,000 cases a year, from what I understand.
Brian, how many cases?
22,000.
Wow. Brian writes, I had a renter, didn't pay his rent for 3 months. He gave us excuses and then we evicted him, had no choice. He was living rent-free and collecting money. We learned from that mistake. Being selective is an owner's choice, and it's very important.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to open the phones. I want to see what's out there in terms of stories. I'd like to hear from landlords. I may hear from tenants too. But I'm primarily interested this morning for this segment to hear what issues you have or had as landlords. 604-280-9898. Toll free, 1-877-399-9898. We're already getting lots of response on Facebook. I'm going to take a look at Twitter too, and we'll be right back after this. The Bill Good. Talking with Amy Spencer, President and Chief Spokesperson of Landlord BC, and in response to Kip on Facebook, who says you need to do a story on slum lords, it goes both ways. Kip, I said off the top, we've done lots of stories on tenants' issues and tenants' rights, and we will, I'm sure, in the future. Today we're focused on landlords. Amy Spencer is my guest, and I welcome your calls to her. Linda, hi.
Hi there. I've been a landlord for over 20 years and had really good experiences up until my last tenant, who manipulated the Landlord Tenancy Act in her favor. And I was a little bit naive that I didn't write in my rental agreement about our use of the house. We had a house with a suite on the side that we used occasionally because we live on the Gulf Islands, and if we miss a ferry, it's there for us. And she she wasn't able to pay her rent because she had broken up with her boyfriend, and we gave her a break on the rent all summer. And then she found out in the act that somebody had told her that she could prevent us from using our suite. So, and I phoned the tenancy branch, and they said, oh, well, if you didn't write that in your agreement, you can't use your suite anymore. So what she did is she...
Who would know?
I didn't know. Well, she had called them, and she was told that they could phone the police. My daughter had used the suite because she was going to the VIU campus there, and that's when everything changed.
But you'd never given her permission to use the suite.
No, I know. That was a shock to us. So because we hadn't written that down in the agreement, we had to go and give her three months notice for landlords to use a house, evict her, give her free rent. And then that was fine, which we did. We took the loss because that was our mistake. So what we did is we rented out that her portion of the house to a tenant that agreed to share the house. And then she went back to the landlord tenancy branch and said, we weren't allowed to do that for 6 months because you're supposed to occupy the space that you evict the tenant from. But she wasn't even letting us use our house. So we went to arbitration. At the end, we had to pay her some money just to go away. So it cost us like a...
So, landlord, beware.
Exactly. It
was, know the rules.
Yeah, and, well, those rules aren't really clear. And what I would say to any landlord is there is a page that you can put an addendum page on your landlord tenancy mm-hmm. agreement. Make sure you put everything on there.
Amy Spencer?
Yep, totally agree. And that's one of the services we offer is we offer forms and advice on what kind of addendums you can add in there. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Cody, good morning.
Bill and Amy, I wish that every landlord in the province could hear what I have to say and understand, and that is never, ever, ever put your tenants on a month-to-month tenancy contract. Always have a fixed term, very short tenancy. So if you want to get rid of the tenant, you can do it at the end of the fixed term, no questions asked, goodbye.
Amy, is that good advice?
Well, you know, it's such an, I don't know what to say to that one, but I thank you for your comments. It's really individual choice up to the landlord, depending on how long they want to rent their suite out. But
one more
I can
comment?
Understand why you would look at that from that point of view.
One more comment?
Yes.
If you do have a month-to-month tenancy, you put all of the control into the adjudicator and how he interprets the Landlord and Tenancy Act. By having a fixed-term tenancy, the tenant must leave at the end of the fixed term, and there is no adjudication. It's just done.
Yep, that's true. Yep.
But if, like, I've been in a situation in the past where I signed I think it was a one-year lease, and then we were month-to-month after that. But doesn't the owner have the right, if you've chosen to go month-to-month, doesn't that give the landlord the right at the end of a month to give you notice?
They can give you 1 month notice.
Yeah, and you have to give them some notice.
Yeah.
So, Cody, I guess what I'm asking is what's wrong with that if it's agreeable with both parties?
The problem becomes when it's never agreeable. When there is a disagreement, then the control is all lost by the landlord, and he's the one footing the bill. So what happens is, the adjudicator gets all the control, and you better hope that he woke up on the right side of the bed.
Thanks, Cody. Frank, good morning.
Hi.
Hi,
Bill. The previous caller that mentioned about a fixed term tenancy, if at the end of the tenancy you allow the tenant to remain, then it automatically converts to month to month.
It automatically does?
Yeah, it automatically does. If the tenant stays, if you allow the tenant to stay at the end of a 6 month, let's say at the end of a 6 month tenancy, it automatically converts to month to month.
What if the landlord says we're going to do a 1 year lease and then I'm going to ask for another 1 year lease? Can they not do that?
They can't do that. No, they're not allowed to. What you can do is you can have a 1 year lease, and if you want to renew the like if a tenant stays in, it automatically converts to month to month at the end of that lease term.
Amy, is he right?
I had a different understanding. We have forms where I believe you can choose whether to keep the month to month or extend the lease or re-sign the lease is what I mean. From what I understand, if you've been there for a year and you want to sign another year lease, you can do that. But there's a lot of intricacies to the act, so...
Talking with Amy Spencer, President and Chief Spokesperson of Landlord BC, with Bill Good on CKNW News Talk 980. Laura Lee, good morning to you.
Thank you. I've been a landlord. I am a landlord. I also am a realtor doing property management.
Yes.
And a couple of things. On an end date lease, which I use and I highly recommend as well, I just sign a new end date lease. So it doesn't roll over to month to month. And so that there's still an expectation between both parties, either we both get along or we're parting company. Also, if someone's on a month-to-month lease, you can't give them a 30-day notice to vacate, as far as I know. You have to have just cause. You have to be moving into the property. You have to be building on it. Many people, when they go to sell a house, they think, oh, we can just go give our tenants notice and make the place look nice. You can't do that.
So is there a hard and fast rule on that? Is Laura Lee right?
Actually, I think she might be. I'm sorry, I don't have the details specifically for that, so I apologize. But I think the lesson here is that it's very complex and a lot of people interpret it different ways. But I believe she is right, actually.
Yeah, and Amy, I think your group is fabulous, and I'm actually going to look you up and sign up for some courses because there's always something to learn, so I'm very appreciative that you're there.
Okay, Laura Lee, I want you to stay on the line, too, because I want both of you to respond to Leslie on Facebook, who says, I would ask for a large damage deposit and the right to inspect the place quarterly and check every reference. I'd also ask them why I should rent to them in the first place and see how on the same page we are regarding expectations. Scary stuff, though. The pigs and cheats always seem to prosper. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know which side of the fence the pigs and cheats may be on. But with that aside, is what Leslie is asking doable? And how big a damage deposit can you ask for?
You can ask for 50% on the monthly as damage deposit. If there's a pet, you can ask for an additional 50%. And that is part of the regulations. You're not allowed to exceed that.
So the very most damage deposit you can ask for, even if you have a pet or they have a pet, is 1 month's rent.
That's my understanding of it, yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Amy?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Laura Lee or Amy, anything else that you would suggest that landlords do to make sure their rights are protected?
Oh, if I may add, you are allowed actually to go into a property once a month with notice for inspection. However, the tenant's also allowed peaceful enjoyment of the property, so the two can conflict. And you don't want to be going into somebody's home once a month to check them out.
Well, she said
maybe
quarterly.
Initially. Yeah, yeah. But the Act does actually allow for once a month.
Really?
Yeah.
But as you say, I mean, no tenant wants that, and most landlords don't want to have to do it either.
No, you don't want to be interfering with someone's life. But I go on gut. I actually like to take people with pets because I find they're more responsible.
Yep.
Usually. I have been burned, but usually they are more responsible.
Appreciate that. Graminder writes on Facebook, Residential Tenancy Board has major delays in holding hearings. My uncle, who had a rental property, had a tenant who wouldn't pay rent after a year of on-time payments. He ended up being owed $9,000 in rent. The hearing took 3 months to schedule, and that was after we got a Vancouver Eviction Services involved. So all the more reason to be diligent, Amy.
Absolutely. And no matter how diligent you are, you're not always going to be 100% correct, but I think it would be a bit more peace of mind if you did your homework first on the person that you're bringing in.
Well, who knew you needed permission to use the suite in your own home? Appreciate your time this morning. We break for the news at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to look into that story you've been hearing in the news the past 24 hours. Canada Revenue locking down against malicious heartbleed bug. That story right after the news headlines. It is a major vulnerability that affects almost two-thirds of the Internet's websites, including the website for the Canada Revenue Agency. The glitch is known as Heartbleed, and it was just discovered yesterday after sitting undetected for 2 full years. The bug leaves personal information like credit card numbers, emails, and messages vulnerable to hackers. In response to the discovery, the CRA website shut down in an effort to halt any possible security breaches. What effect could this have on the major amounts of personal financial information that streams into the CRA website when Canadians e-file their tax returns? Gabriel Lauren is certified general accountant and founding partner of Lauren Nanke and Company, an accounting firm, formerly worked at CRA. Gabrielle, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. What was your immediate reaction when you heard this story?
Oh, my God. Was
That's
well
a good
the
one.
Extent of it. It was like, oh, my goodness, we've got such a variety of information that CRA is holding on all Canadian taxpayers, corporations, personal, trusts, everything, and that's out there.
Is there any evidence that they've been hacked?
Not that we've seen on our end. Being in the professional accounting practice, you would know if someone had some irregularities on their files, if something happened to their tax refund, anything along those lines. We haven't had anything like that this year at all yet.
So fingers crossed.
Exactly. And that's all you really can do at this point. You know, it's one of those scenarios where in an effort to become more technologically advanced, trying to mitigate the number of man hours, data entry errors. Most businesses are going more electronic and they're going paperless, and it's definitely helped with everything when it comes to our lives. But there's a cost to that, and this is it.
And a risk.
And the risk. Well, that's just it. You know, CRA has been leaning towards having more individuals e-file their tax returns as opposed to paper filing. They've been leaning towards getting direct deposits going so that your refund checks don't have to be processed and you don't have checks going astray. And if someone hasn't put a change of address in, all of that in an effort to get the money faster to people who are owed refunds. That also means that our banking information is out there.
Yeah, it's. I was just thinking as you were speaking, we're always concerned about mail theft with community mailboxes. So now you have to worry about whether or not your check, if you're getting a refund check, is safer being mailed to you or sent electronically.
Well, exactly. You know, and it's funny because things happen in a year that you forget about what happened last year. It happened just to my husband 2 years ago. We were looking for his refund check or his refund that was direct deposit. We couldn't find it anywhere. Well, it turns out it was in an old bank account that was dormant. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know they had that account on file.
But you found it.
And that happens.
But at least you found it.
Well, at least we found it. We were fortunate enough. And there is ways that CRA is actually very good in the sense that if your check has gone missing, if you didn't get your refund, it's a long process, but you can have it traced. And if it didn't arrive, then they'll send you a new check. But it's a long, drawn-out process, and it's not going to happen overnight.
Is there anything we can do as individuals to protect ourselves from this kind of possibility?
Well, the thing is when you've got a website like CRA where you're asking to, like the lean-in process, in other words, to actually access your account, you have to set it up. They verify everything. They make sure your signatures match and all the historical information is there. You have to do everything but give a pint of blood in your firstborn and you finally get access to your account. So they've got a lot of checks.
Yeah, this is interesting because there was something I wanted to find out about. And I went to my accountant, he's been doing my taxes for probably 20 years, and he came back and said, I can't find that information out because they won't tell me, because you haven't signed a form giving me permission to have access to your information, even though every year I give him all my information and he submits it, but he couldn't get it back.
That's right, and that's for your own protection, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And an accounting office is almost as much of a gold mine as CRA is for personal information. And so, you know, we as professionals have to be very careful that we safeguard all your information. But CRA is just that extra line of defense so that you are protected. And that's what CRA is doing with that is they don't let anyone, they won't even let your wife or your kids access your account, even though they probably have all the information about you. You know, they know your mom's maiden name and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But you cannot get access for anyone but your own tax return unless you sign an authorization form where they check signatures and everything else.
Good to know. So have you gone from, oh, my God, to they've got this under control?
Well, no, it's more along the lines of I hope they have it under control. I don't think there are any certainties in life except death and taxes. But sorry, pun there, accounting pun. But the idea is that, you know, you'll never know where your stuff is secure. It's your banking, it's anything. But with this Heartbleed bug, you know, one of the things that we've done within our own organization here is say, okay, everyone has to change passwords. Make sure at least the little things are done. CRAs and every other organization that is affected by this is going to have to put their own checks and balances in place to make sure their information is secure and their clients and customers' information is secure. Because if you've got something out there, it's such a hurt if you are hacked, be it your personal information, if you lose your identity, anything. A couple of years ago, we had one of our clients, we went to file their tax return, and CRA said, it's already filed. And I kind of went, excuse me? And CRA said, yes, we filed it through this tax preparation place. Well, she had her identity stolen, had no idea until CRA ended up telling her that her tax return had been already filed. She had her SIN number gone, everything. The poor girl had to go through so many hoops to get her identity back. It was just a nightmare for her.
Good grief.
Those things happen out there
right
now.
Maybe, oh my God.
Oh my God, exactly. And that's where I look at, you know, when I first saw the, like, we got a blurb actually from CRA, which is great. You know, as an e-filer, all of us got information from CRA, a website, a link that kind of said, hey, we put down our website, this is why. So we knew at 6 o'clock yesterday morning that this went down. So our first reaction was, so how long is this going to take? Are we going to have problems filing tax return up until April 30th? What is going to happen?
Yep.
But, you know, it's not like they're sitting back on their laurels not doing anything about it. They're working diligently to make sure that information is out there. Whatever has been e-filed, from what I understand, it's still being processed. So the cogs are still turning over at CRA. It's just no new stuff can go in.
So does this mean people who haven't filed yet and are expecting refunds might be waiting a longer period of time?
They are. And in all defense, again, you know, I don't want to defend CRA. Actually, I work on the other side, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the refunds have been processed so much quicker over the years.
Yeah.
You know, we were looking at 10, 15 days and you were getting your refund deposits, which were fantastic.
Yes.
So now we might have to wait an extra week or two.
Okay.
But I'd rather wait an extra week or two and know that my information is secure.
Absolutely.
Than get my refund sooner.
Thank you for doing this.
You're very, very welcome.
We're going to come back with a focused open line. She made a tearful apology, reimbursed the Portland Hotel Society almost $35,000 for trips to Disneyland and Europe, and took a two-week unpaid leave of absence from her job as MLA, but now Jenny Kwan is back to work at the legislature. How does that sit with you, especially if she is your MLA? Can she continue to represent the poorest of the poor? As an MLA, has her credibility been lost with you or restored? I'm curious to know. 604-280-9898, toll free 1-877-399-9898. Have you accepted her story that she did not know that the Portland Hotel Society was picking up the tab for her trips that she believed her husband, who's never been heard from, had paid personally for her and her family's portion of those trips? Or do you still question, as I do, how she could have been blind to the fact that the Portland Hotel Society, regardless of whether or not they were paying for her, was spending a lot of money on some pretty high-end hotels and other things while she was watching it all go down. Your thoughts? 604-280-9898, toll-free 1-877-399-9898. Jenny Kwan is back in the legislature after the two-week unpaid leave of absence from her job as MLA, but it's going to be some time, if ever, that she can put the Portland Hotel Society issue behind her, despite paying back almost $35,000 for trips to Disneyland and Europe. Your thoughts? I'd especially like to hear from you if you're a constituent of hers or if you have voted for her in the past. Jenny, good morning to you.
Yeah, oh, hi there.
Hi.
Bill, I'll start the ball rolling, I guess. Why is it that during the time of committing the crime, these people don't feel any remorse? And then after, when somehow they're pulled out from the behind the scenes and dragged to the public, suddenly we get this tear-jerking thing. And what is that all about?
Because they're exposed and they're embarrassed. And I would caution you on one thing, and I must correct you for my own legal purposes. When you talk about the crime, there was no legal experience. There was no charge made. And I know you were being figurative and not literal, but I feel obligated
you
to make that because I don't want to spend my summer in court.
No, and I don't blame you. Actually, thank you for correcting that. But, you know, it is still, why, in fact, why is it not considered anything like that? To me, the question is, you're doing something that, to me, is so wrong in all senses. Can it not be viewed as a crime? I mean, that's the question.
Well, there would have to be a charge laid. There would have to be evidence presented. And, in fact, in this case, the government decided to try to clean up the Portland Hotel Society without going through the courts, without laying charges. They may have felt they couldn't have made charges stick. But, the you know, unfortunately, an awful lot of good work was undone when I think people, and not just Ms. Kwan, seem to be taking advantage, seem to be feeling entitled to some luxuries that most fair-minded people would say were over the top for a nonprofit that is supposed to be taking as much money as it can get to pay to help people in poverty.
Right.
So I take it you're not very forgiving of Jenny Kwan, which is the...
No, sadly I'm not.
...the question I'm asking. Yeah. Mara, your thoughts.
It's just, it continues to be, you know, people profiting off of, you know, keeping, you know, disenfranchised folks in the downtown east side.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, despite the fact that the Portland Hotel Society and the people who ran it did a lot of good things and continue to do a lot of good things for those people. But they were starting to do too many good things for themselves, it would seem.
Yeah, you know, profit, you know, people in the social service sector, you know, benefiting, again, off of folks who are, you know, probably most of them were sexually abused as kids in foster homes, you know, horrific backgrounds. And here we are, you know, profiting off of that.
Some people seem to have been. Back with the final segment of your calls on this. Mark, Mike, Ed, please stay on the line. We'll get to as many people as we can right after this. And remember, Pat Quinn, my guest right after the 10 o'clock news. Jenny Kwan back in the legislature, back on the payroll. Lots of response to this story on Facebook and on Twitter. Beth says Jenny should resign. She would insist on it if it were any other MLA. Live by the sword, die by the sword. Frank says she should resign and she should be charged. Strong feelings out there still. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. Thanks for taking my call. You know, this is a really important issue. And, you know, I caught Eckford Schloeffen on this shift, and he did such an excellent job. He hammered the Kwan story. He hammered Kwan for about 40 minutes. And I was thinking, that's a fighting spirit. That's sticking up for the people of this province, and that's what we've got to rally behind. And, you know, I didn't really care too much about this story, but when I relook at this story, the optics on this Kwan story look bad. She looks guilty. And it doesn't matter if she's guilty or not. And I feel sorry for her if she's innocent.
Well, it does matter whether she's guilty or not.
Well, no, but I feel sorry for her if she is innocent, because I'm saying this is a political issue. And in this province, we have to show this government that we control our government. And I say Kwan has got to go down, because we can all let the government have the precedent on this bill that they get to get away with stuff like this. And on that principle alone, she has to go down.
She is a member of the opposition. She is part of the government in that sense, but the government is the Liberal government, and they chose not to bring charges to the Portland Hotel Society officers or to Jenny Kwan. I don't think there's any question of legality. There is certainly a question of ethics, a question of morality, a question of propriety in this, and I've been asking the question since the day this story broke, is that how could she not have at least observed a level of expenditure that would have seemed out of place? I mean, if she had been in the lobby of that hotel as a visitor and seen directors and officers of the Portland Hotel Society staying in a swank hotel and spending big money, would she not have questioned it as an MLA, especially as an East Vancouver MLA? Hard to imagine that she would not have. Mike, good morning.
Yeah, I kind of believe some of Jenny Kwan when she says, the other thing I see is this industry of poverty seems to work for some. And the last thing I want to point out is, this ex-husband of hers, who had, her story was, he told her he covered all this. What kind of a coward is this man? Why didn't he come out and tell us what he knows? Why didn't he just come out and stand by her and say, yeah, well, she's telling you the truth, and yeah, I had a hand in this. And,
well, he hasn't disputed it.
Well, he's a coward. Come on out. Let's just come on out and hear his side. Don't let her hang out to dry. It's not right. It's not fair. There's two people involved here.
Thank you. Ed?
Bill,
I have to assume he's following legal advice.
Is it possible for you to hide $35,000 from your wife over 2 years?
I'd have trouble hiding $35 from my wife.
So it's impossible.
I'm not being serious, but she would certainly be aware of anything like that.
She just did not want to ask, but she was also getting all those benefits from her husband being involved. She knew she should definitely step down.
I think the criticism that is very valid and very fair is that had this been a member of the other party, if this had been a liberal and Jenny Kwan had become aware of it or it became news, she would have, in her typical fashion, have been very shrill and very hard on an opposing member of government. So I don't think she's getting any treatment that she would not have served up to anybody else in similar circumstances. It's going to be very interesting to see how her colleagues respond to her. There's already a pretty good rift in the NDP at the moment over leadership, over jobs versus environment, and now they have this to deal with. It's going to be interesting to watch. Brian writes, in her position as an advocate, MLA, and wife of the employee of the society, she either had to know or ought to have known something stunk. In the first case, if she kept her mouth shut, then is guilty. In the second case, if she really didn't know, she's incompetent. That's from Brian. You're with Bill Good on CKNW News Talk 980. We're going to break for the news to the top of the hour, and then it's been a great day for me from a personal point of view. Two of my all-time favorite people and all-time favorite Canucks in studio today, Trevor Lindenhoff, the top of the program, and Pat Quinn, who is being honored by joining the Ring of Honor on Sunday, will be here in studio right after the news. Stay tuned.